Radio Show, your home for car talk covering the latest news to the greatest views on the biggest names in performance, sports, and just plain cool driving machines. Let's rev up the conversation. Time for Driven Radio Show.
Hey, all you gearheads and car fiends, welcome to Driven Radio Show, your weekly automotive happy hour. I am Brett Hatfield here with my co-host and engineer extraordinaire, Mr. Mark Groves.
That's me.
We are coming to you from Driven Radio Studios. You know, as long as we've been at this, I ought to just call you my partner in crime.
Fair.
And that brings up this. Driven Radio Show is 5 years old this week. 5 years ago, two strangers named Brett and Mark met over pizza and ideas. One guy had an amazing abundance of car smarts. The other guy had an idea for a show, decades of radio experience, a grotesque fascination with land yacht Mopars.
Wonder which guy that is.
And Krager SS wheels.
You douche.
We started a podcast that tuned up early, bringing in guests talking about car news and looking forward to what we'd discover in the next show. 5 years and several adjustments later, here we are.
Woohoo!
We got to give hat tips and many thanks to Vern Estes of Vernon Estes Classics, Kansas City's premier Shelby Whisperer, and to Corey Pratt of CravingCarsLive.com. Make sure you check him out. They've jumped in to co-host when Mark got buried in full-time, more than full-time job duties.
Yeah.
You were only running radio ads for 37 cities.
Yeah, it was busy.
5 years seem to have sped by faster than a Hoonigan with a Hold My Beer record to beat. But here we are, still meeting cool car people, still having fun discovering car news.
Yeah.
And best of all, we are still talking to you. Thank you for listening. Like we say at the end of every show, we couldn't do it without you. Our special guests this week are Dave Kenny and Greg Ingold of the Haggerty Price Guide. Dave Kenny is a lifelong automobile enthusiast, collector, owner of automotive valuation firm U.S. Appraisal, contributor to the Haggerty Insider, publisher of the Haggerty Price Guide, and also writes for Octane Magazine, which you don't see on this side of the pond very much. Dave also serves on the McPherson College Advisory Board that's going to have to figure out how to spend more than $1 billion here coming up. Greg Ingold is an avid car enthusiast, a member of the Haggerty Valuation Team since 2014, contributor to Haggerty Media, as well as the Haggerty Insider, and editor of the Haggerty Price Guide. Greg and Dave, welcome back to Driven Radio.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Before we jump into everything, Mr. Kenny, who is on the board of the McPherson College Restoration Program, care to speak a little bit about the big news of McPherson's massive gift this week?
Yeah, you know, I think it was called the Big Audacious Goal at one point, and not the advisory board that I'm on, not the restoration advisory board, but the actual board of the college said, you know, you don't get what you don't ask for. And they took it upon themselves to change the endowment in the college and to really, really grow it. The news that came out this week is just astonishing. Yeah. There was a $500 million, $500 million match that was on the table, and match, which is unusual for a college. And the person who was given, who is anonymous, said, "You raise $250,000. I'll throw in $500 million." So it was basically your classic 2-for-1 match. And then when it came time to do the the big reveal, where I guess the 20th of July, McPherson College announced the fact that they had met this goal, the anonymous donor said, "What the heck? I might as well just make it a cool $1 billion." So that means that the endowment for little McPherson College in Kansas is one of the, not the best, endowed colleges of all small liberal arts colleges in the United States. Now, that's all great news. It doesn't all come at once. Nobody's writing a check for $1 billion. A lot of these are lifetime gifts and things like that. But it's our job now on the board and all the boards to invest wisely. You use the word spend. I'm going to use the word invest. The other thing that we have to do is keep the small town, small college atmosphere alive at McPherson, because that's some of the most important part of that college. And I think as a person who attended it, you would agree. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. Phrasing aside, I'm thrilled to death for my alma mater. Oh, my God. What an amazing opportunity for them, and I can't wait to see how they invest it.
Well, with that much money coming in from a donor who's anonymous, which is amazing, how soon is it before they build the Ramon Escobar Memorial Library?
Well, actually, there's already a move afoot on for a lot of buildings, because a lot of the buildings were basically, you know, let's just call them Eisenhower era buildings.
And so they are.
And they are. And a lot of them are in desperate need of some, HGTV, renewal type of thing. And so I know that there's that. But I think, stay tuned. The stuff that's going to be coming is just going to be amazing. I just couldn't be happier. 800 students, $1.5 billion. It's quite a challenge to make everything work and make everything work perfectly in the next 10 and 15 and 20 years.
Oh, I see the demand for big screen TVs in every dorm room coming soon.
I went shopping for a big screen TV not too long ago. And now, of course, a big screen TV is 75 and 75 inches. So I'm old school. I figured a 50 inch TV was big screen TVs. Hell, you can buy those things for $200 all day long now.
Yeah, but you can't get far enough away from a 75 inch TV in one of those dorm rooms to be able to take it all in.
Well, that's the beauty of it. Everything's life sized.
Well, everybody's going to come to your house, Brett, because I hear your new house has theater rooms up and downstairs and left and right. It's in Kansas City, so it's east and west.
Yeah, well, that's not untrue. What's funny is in the old house we lived in, we had two TVs, two. But when we bought this house, the people who sold it were selling everything in the house, in the house. And I started looking at what they were asking for it, and it wasn't a lot. And I said, okay, fine, we'll buy all this stuff. And we got seven TVs in this frickin' house now. I don't watch most of them.
But, probably don't have the remotes for five of them, right?
No. Hey, they all run on those Amazon Fire Sticks, baby. I got remotes everywhere.
Yeah. Nice.
Including on your mobile phone. So
yes, absolutely.
But anyhow, back to that. Thank you for the call out. It means so much to me, and I know it means a lot to everybody who knows McPherson and yourself, obviously. It's an amazing, just an amazing gift. And not only that, there's even more news from McPherson, because they're taking their first ever car to Pebble Beach, and
yes,
that's going to be on the lawn here in August. And so, they're there to win. I don't know what they're going to win, but they're there to win. These guys are not taking prisoners. So we'll see what happens.
As that is just around the corner, why don't you talk about the car that's going to Pebble?
It's a Mercedes 1953 Mercedes 200S, and that's a convertible in this case. It's basically, if you want to add, if you want to say it's the daddy of the Gullwing, it's pretty much that car. The engine was directly out of this car and into the Gullwing. So it's a car that came out before the Gullwing came out. One of the most iconic cars of the entire world. So it's a big, it's a sporty car. This particular one, McPherson, I think about a dozen, and they've been working on it for at least 6-7-8 years, something like that. So if you think about it, they've had complete turnovers of students all the time. So it's kind of like, restoring a restoring an airplane while you're flying it in some ways, because the people started working on it are now graduated and well into their career and whatever they're doing, hopefully almost all automotive related. So there are an awful lot of people that are going to be on the lawn at Pebble Beach this year that are going to be McPherson people. So it's going to be interesting to see whatever they win. And I hope they do win something. The cheer that goes up is going to be a great day to be a Bulldog.
I'm heartbroken that I'm not going to get to be there this year. That sucks.
Yeah, it really does. But, I think they're going to lift that restriction, the legal restriction, and they'll let you back in to Monterey. I've talked to a couple attorneys, and they said, really, it's not something they can't deal with. So
yeah, just
yeah, that's good.
500 feet away from the cars. You can take pictures.
I got a couple wigs and a long lens, so I'm ready to go. Last time we talked was right after Amelia Island, and we talked about how well the sales did there. Since then, collector car auction sales seem to be fairly robust. Meekum pulled $113 million out of their Indy Spring Classic. Barrett Jackson netted almost $31 million in Las Vegas. And Meekum again took another $30 million from their Harrisburg, Pennsylvania sale. The market doesn't seem to be slowing. With the expected recession yet to show itself, do you think we can anticipate a hot market for the rest of the year?
I'll take that, Greg. I think we can. You know, the world's worst predicted recession. I mean, you know, what is it? 18 months in a row. Every single person has said, oh, there's going to be a recession. It's going to happen in 2 months. And then it's going to happen in 3 months and whatever. And it's never come around. And apparently, you know, I mean, you look at some of the signs now and things are actually getting a little better. So that takes that, you know, a little bit off of the, you know, off the plate that we're heading into a recession. We still could be. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But things are looking good. I'm going to correct you. You said Meekum Harrisburg. That's this weekend. It better be, because I'm going there tomorrow. So if I drive to Harrisburg and there's no show there, I'll be a little upset. I think you meant Meekum in Kissimmee.
Yes, it was Kissimmee. I misspoke.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyhow, I'm going to go there tomorrow, meet some friends and possibly have an adult beverage and, you know, walk around a little bit. Looking forward to that. So, yeah, I mean, even though our guide that we do, our help me out here, Greg.
What am I? Haggerty Price Guide.
No, not the Haggerty Price Guy. I know that one.
Okay. I'm just making sure. We spoke earlier about our Haggerty collector car indexes how those are doing. I can step in here. I mean, yes, our collector car indexes, which kind of gives us an overall temperature of the market on like the high-end Ferraris, muscle cars, and all that. We did see a little bit of slowing. This is really in context of what we've been seeing over the past couple of years, which has been incredible growth, and we're still seeing a robust market. It's just not, you know, unchecked and crazy like it was.
So
but
growing at a slower rate.
Yeah, I mean, if I was to say anything, you know, negative about it, I would say maybe it's letting off the gas a little bit, but it's certainly not brushing the brakes at all.
So watching what came out of Kissimmee and what came out of Indy and Las Vegas, have you seen any surprise sales or anything that went bigger than anticipated?
You know, I've been watching a bunch of sales, but some of the things that I've seen have actually been online and not just bring a trailer for a change. We've seen some pretty amazing sales at Cars and Pids and some one or two of the MB, which is not a really online bid site. I think things are popping in a lot of ways. Obviously, we've seen some huge sales at bring a trailer. But we're looking at all the online marketplaces and seeing some good stuff. It's a little soft in some segments. I mean, I don't think I'd want to be selling 50s cars right now exclusively, but that's to be expected. And you know, when I say soft, it doesn't mean that they're down 60%. It means they're down 16% or 15% or something like that. So it's not like, you know, everybody's running for the exits. There's absolutely none of that going on there.
Really, the best examples are still bringing really good money. Dave, did you see the 4,200-mile Honda Prelude that brought $79,000?
Yeah, I mean, seriously, that is not a Honda Prelude. It's a Honda Quaalude. I mean, obviously, because that's a lot of money for that car. I mean, just a lot of money. So it's still some insanity in the market. There's still some people who, you know, will buy anything that they want, they'll pay any price for it. And yeah, you know, to be real honest, so that's a great sign.
Speaking of Cars and Bids, somebody you may or may not know may have purchased a 2002 Ford F-150 Harley Davidson edition with 20,000 miles on it on Cars and Bids last week.
Don't you ever learn?
It's gorgeous. You should see it. It's absolutely spotless. And no.
What color black is it?
Yes. Yes, it is. With the orange pinstripe that turns to flames down the side.
No, really?
Yes.
That one. Okay. How different?
Well, no. That's the other two were black and silver. This one's just black.
Nice.
Yeah. Very nice. Very nice.
So
no, I think that you know, if you're looking for a collector car, it's not a bad time to be in the market. If you're selling, it's not a bad time to be in the market. It's just that you know, it's not as crazy as it was a year ago. It's returned to some level of sanity, but things are still happening like over the place.
I'm glad to see that it still is. The new quarterly issue of the Haggerty Price Guide just dropped. What were some of the big movers? What are some of the winners and some of the losers?
Greg, you want to start out?
Yeah, I can start out with that. Yeah, so one of the big one of our big losers was actually one of my favorites, the 89 through 94 Nissan Skyline. Those dropped by 12%. I mean, these have been on a relative hot streak for the past few years, but yeah, I think that they just went up so fast that they needed to level out a little bit. I mean, we've seen a little bit of softening in that market, but it's softened even more this recent update. I think that it's what I'm seeing is that there's kind of a glut of really questionable cars hitting the market, and people are paying a bit less than what they're willing to pay, less than what they used to be for those cars. They're still very desirable, but and I don't think we're going to see a $30,000 really nice Skyline anymore. But yeah, that's the big one that stood out to me, is that the high-end Japanese market is starting to get a little bit more sane again.
Yeah, and I think interesting to point that out. Also, this is growth over the last six segments of the book. So, you know, it's a little leveling out more than anything else. We've got the 04 VW Golf R32 is up an amazing 46%.
Gee-many.
That's big, big money. I mean, that's basically a doubling of the value of the car over a very short period of time. And we've seen some very good examples of that car come on the market recently. So, you know, that also helps skew that number upwards. So there's one of our big, there's been one of our big winners. So.
And another one that really stood out to me was the Lotus Esprits, the ones with the twin turbo V8s. Those went up by 33%. You know, if you know those cars really well, they've been kind of your budget supercar for a long time. So, you know, you get Ferrari performance for, you know, a bargain price. And I think people are starting to catch on to these, that they're a good buy and you get a lot of performance for them. So, you know, we're starting to see them get reliably into the low $100,000 range for a halfway decent one, where you basically were able to steal them a few years ago.
Let's just tear the bandage off and talk about the biggest loser we have. It's the Harley Davidson. Oh, no. Sorry.
I barely heard you, and I know what you were talking about.
Good. Let those suckers drop. I love them. I'll buy them in quantity.
72 to 82. It starts with F, but it's Fiat, not a Ford. The X19 is down. It's another drop. You know, probably is going low. Those are a lot of fun to drive. They're little tiny cars, Fiat, very sporty and very fast for you know, for buzzing around town. But it's kind of fun to see that on the top of the list, because it's not a car that normally makes a lot of lists. So, yeah.
Well, didn't it make one of your big gain lists not long ago?
I think it did. Yeah,
I think it did. So, yeah,
yeah. A lot of times that's what happens. You know, five or six very visible sales of really good cars come along, and then everybody puts their car on and their car isn't as good. And so, you know, it kind of skews the number. We had that happen. The classic one was the 190 SL Mercedes-Benz, you know, went from $60,000 to $360,000. And, you know, the next four that sold in the high 200s, and then it did drop like a stone. You know, it happens all the time in the old car world, because a lot of times people, I'm never going to sell my 190. I'm never going to sell my 190. I'm never going to $250,000. You're going to have that son of a gun. That sort of thing happens. So, and that might have happened with the X19 as well.
Did I also see a dip in big body Broncos?
Yes, you did. The brick noses, the 87 through 91s went down by 13%. They're not really the most loved out of the big body Broncos. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that those got hit the hardest. But really, all Broncos they're softening. So your first gens didn't do much, but all your big bodies, they went down to some extent. I think it's, you know, like everything else that we're seeing, that I think collectors are getting a little bit more sane with how they're willing to spend their money. I think there's a little bit less fear of missing out. So I think discerning buyers are dictating the market right now. And
let's talk about the Broncos, especially. I mean, you could go to any town, mm-hmm. Montana, Wyoming, wherever, Idaho, and there'd be a garage, and behind the garage there'd be six or seven, you know, almost abandoned Broncos. And so they've gotten rebuilt. They've been made into, you know, everything from resto mods to completely redone cars. A lot of them, they have, you know, they've done just an amazing thing with lift kits and make them all special. They took them to auctions. There were a lot of them out there. It could very well be that most everybody who wanted a Bronco, you know, has got a Bronco. And so that's going to, maybe keep that market soft for a little bit longer. Doesn't mean that they're going all straight to hell or anything like that. It just means the value is going down because the pipeline's getting filled. And we see that in lots and lots of cars, especially in new cars. And that's what's happening as well. I mean, look what happened recently, the Ford Lightning, the electric car. The Ford cut the price on them.
Yeah.
$10,000 basically. And that was it, because the pipeline got filled. So we're going to see more of that in the new car market. And we do see that often in the old car market.
If you were shopping with your own money, what would you be hunting right now?
Wow.
Greg, other than dirt bikes.
Yeah, I'm kind of cheap in that aspect.
Kind of?
But, yeah. That's a good one. I think I would start looking at the new wave of collector trucks. So maybe actually your Harley Davidson F-150s and your your old body style Fords and Chevys. I think that those are I think that old trucks or truly old trucks are getting a little bit too expensive. And
well, in order to avoid dead air, which is what I gave you earlier, there is a car that I've been looking at that I might just pull the trigger on. It's a interesting car because it's considered by some people a replica car. It's not. I've been looking at the Series 1 Excaliburs, the 1966, 67, 68, and I believe they made some in 69. They were Chevy powered cars. Are very, very basic. So many of them have left this country and gone to mostly Sweden, that there's very few of them left. And the most desirable ones are the cycle fendered no doors SSKs. And I've seen two of them over the summer. I was out footloose and fancy free driving across the country earlier this year, and stopped in and saw two of them. One, just an incredibly nice car. The other, let's just put it this way, if there were termites that ate fiberglass bodies, that's what it was. But I mean, there's a few of them out there, and they're the most dirt simple car there is. They're basically a chassis, the very, very basic fiberglass shell on top of it. I think they're a landmark car that, the same old thing. America's built them. We designed them. We had everything to do with them. And we abandoned them because they're American cars. We do this all the time. And, lots of Europeans are saying, wait a minute, this is the American Allard. What are you guys not cherishing these cars for? So There you go.
What would you sell now if you had one in your stable? What do you think that people should have on the market?
50s four doors, maybe in some cases 60s four doors. That's an answer we've been giving for an awful long time. You know, there aren't that many hipsters in Portland left that don't have a 50s four door. And, you know, that's a big part of the market is kind of the hipster market, the tiki bar guys. And so, you know, they don't have a lot of secondary use right now. And you know, they're dirt cheap and they're fun cars and they're fun to drive. So there's a lot to them. I just don't see the value changing a lot in a lot of the cars. One of the things is they're so expensive to restore. You know, it can be a $13,000 car with $58,000 worth of chrome. That's a problem. So,
you hear that, Mark?
Yeah, I'm listening. Although, gotta admit, it's the only car you could drive where you could play your Burt Camford MP3s without being stared at wildly in traffic. Playing them in my truck was not good.
No?
Oh, yeah. Wonderland by Night. Gimme, gimme.
Yeah, well, you could always do the, you could paint the bumpers black and start a new religious organization or something like that. But, you know, that would work as well.
Oh,
you can try that.
I'm down.
And finally, what would you hang on to if you had it in your stable? What do you think has future potential?
You know, it's performance luxury right now, and I think everybody is going towards performance cars. I did a piece on this recently in Hagerty, and it's kind of interesting because, you know, a luxury car in the 50s meant it had leather. And it had a radio, I mean, you know, and a heater that's like standard. And, you know, in the 60s, that changed and it became air conditioning and power windows and stuff like that. Well, now, I mean, like the cheapest Mitsubishi has all those things in it and a lot more. And so the definition of what luxury is has changed. But luxury is very hard to define, whereas performance is much easier to define because you can do it in 0 to 60, you can do it in horsepower, you can do it in all that sort of stuff. And I think that, you know, for the last actually 50 years, that's a change in the world of old cars, and people are much more into performance cars than they are into luxury cars.
Greg, what would you hang on to?
I'm thinking probably muscle cars. If you've got a good muscle car, I'd hang on to it for a little bit. We're seeing a little bit of craziness in that market, especially on like the higher end. But you know, the high end muscle cars, your 440, your Hemi cars, your LS6 Chevelles, those are pretty volatile. But you know, we're still seeing good interest in kind of your mid-tier cars like your SS396s and your Z28s. Actually, first-gen Z28 Camaros took a dip and then they came back. So, I mean, I wouldn't, just because our indexes say that the muscle car is softening a little bit, I wouldn't be so eager to go sell my car off right now.
With Monterey just around the corner, what are the two of you watching? There are some heavy hitting Ferraris coming at RM, Gooding, Bonhams, including a 67 Ferrari 412P Berlinetta, a 64 250 LM, Steve McQueen's 67 275 GTB4, and also a 1949 Talbot Lago T26 Grand Sport Cabriolet. I think all of these are going to be big number cars. Any idea what these might bring, and what are you keeping an eye on?
I'm definitely watching the car at Bonhams, the 412P. I think that's a spectacularly handsome car. Just a really, really good looking car. Lots of very famous race car drivers associated with it. Some race history, not the world's best race history, but a good race history. Ownership chain, well known, including people all the way up to today, people who are famous who've been owners. And I think that car, the whisper number, I think, is $29 million, $30 million. It could do better than that. I've seen somebody predicted $40 million. I would fall over backwards if that's what it hit. And that could be the biggest car coming out of Monterey. I always like to see the stuff that everybody, you know, looks at and watches. I like going to all the auctions. One of my fun ones to go to is always going to Beacom, where very, very few of the cars sell for the huge money because they have so many cars. So I mean, you know, they do very, very well, don't get me wrong, but they have all kinds of cool cars. One of my Studebaker Avanis is going to be there. I don't own it anymore. Sold it to a guy who's decided that he's going to change his focus on cars, and it was basically too nice for him to drive. And so I'm looking to see that. It's a black 63 with an orange interior, which is a great color combination of those cars. So we'll see what that does.
Greg, what do you like out of Monterey?
I mean, the 412P is really the car that caught my eye the most. But on top of that, that 250 LM that is coming up for sale, I'm intellectually curious to see how that does. Reason being that Art Curiel in France just had one that had no race history, was a complete, you know, original steel body, but, you know, this is a race car, and race cars are supposed to have race history. So I'm very intrigued as just sort of a exercise of major cars that are meant to be raced, how a car with race history is going to compare value-wise to one that doesn't.
Yeah, that's one Greg and I have been talking a lot about. We're really, you know, we didn't have any LM sales. Now we're going to have two in 1 year. Been a long, long time since one came to market, so we'll see what happens.
Dave, I understand you've got a new addition to your automotive stable. What did you bring home?
Well, one of the very fastest production cars from 1964, and an incredibly rare car. You see the replicas of it all the time, but they only made nine. Four of them had four speeds. One of them is in the Crawford Museum in Ohio right now. So there's only eight that are loose and out in the world, and some of them don't have their original motors. I bought the very first Studebaker Avani R3, kind of a legendary car, and it does have a four-speed. When I was doing my traveling across the Midwest, I did my excellent negotiating. I went to the guy's house and said, "What are you doing with my car?" not a really good way to start the negotiations, but I'm very, very happy with it. It was restored recently and does have its original motor. And as a guy who, as you know, everybody knows, I'm into Studebaker Avanis, this is a life goal to own one of the original nine cars. And so that was, you know, it's very nice knowing that one of them is mine and it's the first one and it is a four speed. So all those things put together, I'm very, very happy. It also is my favorite color of a 1964 Avani, which is turquoise with turquoise. So it's an amazing car. Looking forward to driving it.
Is it everything that you had hoped and thought it would be?
I mean, I've owned replicas of an R3. They're beastly cars. They're very, very fast. Or of course, they're supercharged. It's a 304.5-inch engine, which is just a Studebaker 289 bored out, and the 289 Studebaker is a 259 bored out. So you kind of get the idea. You know, in the pre computer era, this was what Andy Granatelli did when he was part of Studebaker and part of Paxton, which was owned by Studebaker. Not everybody knows that. So it was basically Granatelli's production baby. And they had a problem. They went out of business, made any more than nine of them. Interesting car. Like I said, I outside of Z06, was one of the fastest, not the fastest, of the production cars. Broke an amazing amount of land speed records at Salt Flats at Bonneville. So, you know, it's quite a car.
So what makes an R3 an R3 aside from the supercharger?
Well, it's a different, I mean, it's the same supercharger, but there's a, you know, there's a large air box, so it compresses the air more. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of internal plumbing that's a lot different. The engine is you know, different heads, everything else, all the speed tricks that you'd expect from the 1960s. It has a snorkel air filter up front, kinds of cool stuff. I mean, well, they are all late 1964s. And of course, Studebaker went out of business in late 1963. So they were doing the 64 production cars and went out of business a couple of days before Christmas in 1963. So, you know, for somebody who collects cars like this, it is totally a grail car. I've only seen one before that was for sale, and that was many, many years ago at an auction. I watched it at the auction twice. I didn't have the money, and nor did I have the money when I bought this one, but I just made it happen anyway.
Does it still feel snappy now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to – it's the same thing with every old car. I mean, you know, we all have cars that are faster. Some of them are rental cars, right? Because every – you know, I mean, you know, time marches on. But to me, you know, it's – it was an achievement of American engineering. I like the styling, a whole bunch of people don't. And so it was just a, you know, it's going to look nice in the collection, but more importantly, it's going to be a nice car to drive, to, you know, take out and to show it. And my goal is to have it as the very first Studebaker Avani on the lawn at Pebble Beach.
Oh, very nice. Cool. I'm happy for you. That's very cool. Greg, yeah. It looks like you've thrown yourself headlong into the motorcycle world, and with motorcycle ilk like Kyle Smith. What are you up to on two wheels, and is Kyle to blame?
Oh, Mr. Smith is very much to blame for the peer pressure. Yeah, I bought a 96 Honda XR 200R. So my first motorcycle. Yep. Not a road legal bike, but just something to go play around in the woods with some friends and have a good old time. But really well taken care of bike, wasn't beaten up or anything like that. Well cared for, starts every kick. Couldn't be more excited for the new experience. And with somebody like Kyle, it's I'm in good hands, maybe bad hands, you know, depending on you know, how my wallet feels about that. But it's a good thing four-stroke Hondas are so cheap to work on. But he has big plans for me. It's just a matter of how long it's going to take for him to pressure me into doing it. Which,
yeah,
if we're being honest here, I'm probably not going to be long.
Yeah. Hanging around with Kyle, next thing you know, you're going to own four of these suckers, and one of them's going to have street tires on them. One of them's going to be set up for a different kind of race. Kyle's going to infect you with this.
I'm going to call it now. I've never considered a street bike, but yeah, I see myself with a street bike in the next year, whether I realize it or not.
That's new. Uh-huh. You know, Kyle does have that white van that says "We have motorcycles" on the side.
The other side says "Free candy."
Yeah, exactly. That's the one. So
I don't know, in this economy, maybe heavily discounted candy.
Well, I'm not going to help. I never stop looking for motorcycles, so I'll keep an eye out for you, see if I can find something to help taint your garage.
I mean, he's been on my case about it. Some of his buds from McPherson that I know have been on my case. Yeah, it's been a team effort, and it panned out a lot quicker than they were expecting.
Well, add me to the list. I will be a contributor and or enabler.
No, appreciate it.
We've been speaking with Dave Kenny and Greg Ingold of the Haggerty Price Guide. Gentlemen, please take a minute and tell us where we can find you each online and on social media.
You can find me at Haggerty's No Reserve podcast in every 2 weeks, and have a lot of fun talking about collector cars or coming up to auction, went to auction, people paying crazy stupid money and people paying intelligent money for cars. We have a lot of fun talking about cars, and you can see me in Haggerty Insider. I write there quite often, and a number of other magazines, including the British magazines Magneto, and as well as Octane. So I'm all over the place.
Greg, where can we find you?
Yeah, I'm also on Haggerty Media and Haggerty Insider. Contribute to their almost weekly these days. Actually, if you are interested in how we do the Haggerty Price Guide, we are releasing an article here in the next day or so about what the process is. There's a lot of questions about how we do it, how we analyze things, and it might be very enlightening to those of you who are curious as to how the sausage is made.
Greg, Dave, thanks for being with us again. We look forward to talking to you when the next Price Guide drops. And I wish I was going to see you guys in Monterey, but knee surgery comes first.
All right, I'll have a $700 hot dog for you while I'm out there.
Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Always great to have Dave and Greg on.
They are such nice guys.
They are, and they really know what they're talking about. They are fantastic authorities on this stuff, even more so than I am, I think. And it's always good to have them on and get a good look at what the market's doing.
It was nice to hear him talk about liking Studebakers. The Avantis are cool, but I love Studebakers, well, especially from the early 50s. Pretty sweet.
It's the R3, or the Avante is a special car. The R3 obviously much more so with only 9 of them being produced.
God.
The fact that he finally got his white whale, that is so cool. And I can absolutely relate to where he's coming from. How long did I talk Nassau Blue Mid-Year Corvette?
Oh, dude, it was a while. It was a while.
And finally nailed one down. So, Dave, I'm nothing but happy for you. Absolutely. Very, very cool. Thank you so much for spending time with Driven Radio for 5 years.
5 years, baby.
5 years. Ooh, we love what we do, and we wouldn't be able to do it without the support of our listeners. You can find us online at DrivenRadioShow.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Driven Radio Show, and on LinkedIn as Driven Radio Show Podcast. I know it's a mouthful, but we had to go with that. Somebody else had Driven Radio Show, and it's not about cars.
Still angry.
Not about cars. What the hell are you doing? You can also listen anywhere fine podcasts are heard. Not about cars. I am Brett Hatfield from Mark L. Groves. Yo. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time here on Driven Radio.